Have you ever tried to send a text at 40,000 feet and watch that little spinning wheel just turn and turn and turn while the flight attendant tells you the connection is complimentary today? Complimentary? Because nobody would pay for it. I'm Vector, and this is Clear Direct on Radio Hangar. Today we're going to talk about the plumbing behind that spinning wheel and the technology that is quietly tearing the whole thing apart and rebuilding it. Low Earth Orbit Satellite Internet. Starlink Aviation specifically. Let's break this down. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones for a solo private pilot, instrument rated CFI the whole journey. Beautifully made and built to last. If you want something in your pocket, that means more than a certificate in a drawer. That's AviationSoul.com. So let's start with the actual physics, because this is where the story lives. For about 20 years, if you had internet on an airliner or a business jet, it almost certainly came from a satellite parked way, way out in space. Geostationary orbit. That's an altitude of roughly 22,000 miles above the equator. At that exact distance, a satellite orbits at the same rate the Earth turns, so from the ground it appears to hang perfectly still in the sky. That's incredibly useful. You point a dish at one fixed spot and it just stays there. Companies like Viasat and the old GoGo and Inmarsat built enormous businesses on this, and it works. But there is a catch, and the catch is baked into the geometry. 22,000 miles is a long way. Radio waves travel at the speed of light, and even light takes time to cover that distance. Your signal has to climb all the way up to that satellite, come back down to a ground station, go out to the wider internet, and then make the entire round trip back to you. Add it up and you're looking at something like 600 milliseconds of delay before you get an answer. More than half a second. Here's what most people miss about that half second. It doesn't just make things slow. It breaks the way modern internet actually works. Video calls stutter. Web pages that quietly load a dozen little pieces in the background feel broken, because each little handshake pays that delay tax over and over. It's not a bandwidth problem. It's a distance problem. Now, bring the satellite closer. Starlink flies in low Earth orbit. Instead of 22,000 miles, these satellites sit at roughly 340 miles up. That's the neighborhood where the International Space Station lives, because they're so much closer. The round trip collapses from 600 milliseconds down to something like 20 to 40 milliseconds. That's the difference between a conversation with a satellite delay and a conversation that feels like you're on the ground. The data tells an interesting story here. It's not that low orbit is a little better, it's that low orbit is a different category of experience. Real-time video, cloud applications, a video call with air traffic implications for the flight deck someday. All of that becomes genuinely usable. But, and this is the engineering trade, you don't get that for free. A geostationary satellite hangs still so one dish can stare at it forever. A low orbit satellite is screaming across the sky. At 340 miles up, it crosses from horizon to horizon in just a few minutes. So a single satellite is useless on its own. You need a whole swarm of them, blanketing the sky, so that as one drops toward the horizon, another is already climbing up to take the handoff. That's why Starlink is a constellation. As of now, SpaceX has launched well over 7,000 of these satellites, and the operational number in orbit keeps climbing. No previous satellite system in history has ever operated at anything close to that scale. That is the real innovation. Not one clever satellite. Thousands of cheap ones replaced constantly, working as a mesh. And the antenna on the airplane has to keep up with all of that. It can't be a dish on a motor swinging around to chase a target. It's what's called an electronically steered phased array. Think of it as a flat panel full of tiny antenna elements that steer the beam electronically, with no moving parts, switching its aim from one satellite to the next in a fraction of a second. That flat panel is the piece that made airborne low-orbit connectivity practical in the first place. So that's the what and the how. Let's talk about why it matters to us, and let's be honest about both sides. On the promise side, the numbers are genuinely striking. Starlink is advertising download speeds on aircraft measured in the hundreds of megabits per second. For comparison, the legacy airline systems many of us have suffered through often delivered something like 10 to 30 megabits per second, and that was shared across the entire cabin. So we're talking about roughly an order of magnitude improvement, sometimes more per aircraft. The airlines noticed. United Airlines and a number of carriers have signed on to put Starlink across large parts of their fleets, and they're offering it free to passengers, betting that fast, reliable connectivity is now a loyalty tool rather than a paid add-on. Hawaiian was an early mover. Qatar Airways put it on wide-body jets. And in the business aviation world, Starlink Aviation is spreading fast across the Gulfstream, Bombardier, and Cessna Citation communities because a flight department that can run a full office from the cabin is a very easy sell. Now the cons, because there are real ones, and Vector does not do hype without caveats. First, coverage geometry. Low-orbit satellites cover a smaller patch of ground each. So you need ground stations called gateways, sprinkled around the world to connect the constellation to the wider internet. Over the middle of a large ocean or the poles, historically that was a weak spot. SpaceX has been closing that gap with laser links directly between satellites, letting them relay data across the sky without touching the ground. It's clever, and it works. But coverage over the most remote parts of the planet is still maturing. And if you fly long oceanic legs, you should ask hard questions rather than assume. Second, the constellation is a moving target, and I mean that literally. These satellites have a short working life, only about 5 years, and then they deorbit and burn up on purpose. That means SpaceX has to keep launching just to stand still. It's a business that only works if you own the cheapest rockets on Earth, which SpaceX happens to, but it makes the whole thing dependent on one company's launch cadence, and that's a concentration risk worth naming. Third, and pilots especially should sit up for this one, is spectrum and interference. All of this rides on radio frequency bands that are shared and regulated. There are ongoing fights over how much of the sky and the spectrum any one operator should control, and there are legitimate questions from astronomers about thousands of bright satellites crossing every long exposure image of the night sky. These aren't reasons to dismiss the technology. They're the honest friction of putting that many objects into orbit that fast. And fourth, let's talk about the flight deck versus the cabin, because this is where I want to be careful. Almost everything I've described so far is about the cabin. Passenger internet crew email. It is not, today, a certified path for safety critical cockpit data. The systems that feed your navigation, your surveillance, your controller communications, those live under a completely different certification regime. And they should, when someone tells you low orbit satellites are going to revolutionize air traffic control tomorrow. That's the part where the timeline gets honest. Here's the honest timeline. Cabin connectivity, that's happening right now, this year, across real fleets, and it's very good. Using this pipe for operational data, like richer real-time weather, live aircraft health monitoring streamed to maintenance on the ground, smoother electronic flight bag updates. That's the next few years, and it's already starting at the edges. Genuinely safety-critical, certified command and control, riding over a commercial low-orbit constellation. That's a much longer road measured in many years with regulators who are going to move deliberately, and rightly so. Who's building all this? SpaceX is the obvious giant, but it is not the only player, and that matters for anyone thinking about the long game. Amazon is deploying its own low-orbit constellation, Project Kuiper aiming squarely at the same market. Eutelsat OneWeb already has a low-orbit network focused heavily on aviation and government customers. And the legacy geostationary operators aren't sitting still either. They're building blended networks that use both the faraway satellites and the close-in ones, picking the right tool for each moment of the flight. That competition is the healthiest part of this whole story, because the failure mode of a single provider owning every airplane's connection is exactly the kind of thing a systems thinker loses sleep over. So where does that leave us as pilots and as an industry? I think the fair read is this. Low Earth orbit connectivity is not vaporware. It is real, it is flying, and it has genuinely changed what a network connection at altitude can do by attacking the problem at the level of physics, rather than just adding more bandwidth to a fundamentally distant satellite. That's the engineering lesson worth carrying with you. Sometimes the breakthrough isn't a better version of the old thing. It's moving the whole thing 340 miles closer and solving 1,000 new problems to get there, but keep your instrument scan on the caveats. Remote coverage is still filling in. The economics depend on cheap launch staying cheap, and the leap from a great cabin experience to certified flight critical data is a real leap, not a small step. My reporting today draws on the technical specifications and coverage published by SpaceX, the fleet announcements from United Airlines and the other carriers involved, and the ongoing regulatory record from the Federal Communications Commission. If you want the links and the deeper reading, we keep it at radiohangar.com. That spinning wheel at 40,000 feet is finally going away. Took moving thousands of satellites to do it. I'm Vector. Keep asking how it works.